Okay, we are returning to our council meeting at 6:12 p.m. Next item on our agenda is awards and recognition. And would Mr. Michael Woody Wood please come forward?
Mayor, did you want to use this?
Or? Okay, yeah, sure. Okay. Michael started working at the Chevron station in 1968 while he was still in high school. He left in 1973 to pursue other endeavors, including a period of time working for Intalco. He also served in 1986 on the Blaine City Council for a couple of years until he moved out of the area for a brief period. He returned to work at the Chevron station in 1990 to run the automotive service shop and has since owned and operated Woody's Service and Repair Shop until he retired recently in January of this year. Woody, because of his nickname, was when Mike Hill bought the station in order to tell the two Mikes apart. Woody provided a valuable service in downtown Blaine for 32 years as a full-service automobile shop. He was well-liked and appreciated by his customers. They depended on him and trusted him to keep their cars running and in top shape. There are many stories about Woody, and I have a few, rescuing his customers when their car broke down or doing small repairs without a charge. He is also known that if you needed your car repaired just a little sooner than he would fit into his schedule, he would accept a bribe of homemade cookies. Woody says he really appreciated his customers not just for their business, but also for their friendship. They often provided the occasional hug or smile that seemed to be there just when he needed it. There are a lot of people in the community that expressed how much they will miss Woody's dependable service, as well as the loss of having an automobile repair shop downtown. Besides Woody closing his shop, there is some sadness about the passing of an era when the local gas station also provided the full service of an automobile repair shop to serve travelers in the local community. The City of Blaine would like to thank you for your many years of service, serving Blaine as the owner of Woody's Service and Repair Shop. Your business and service in the community has created a better Blaine for both now and for the future.
You're here.
There's a lot of stories to tell about Woody. And Woody knows that I am completely technically challenged. My experience with a car is you turn the key. If it goes on, it's okay. If it doesn't go on, something's the matter, and I need to call Woody. A while back, and Woody will remember this, my wife and I had this car, and it had a tremendous rattle. Every time we took it out, and it was severe, and it rattled around. I said to my wife, there's something seriously wrong. Every time we take this car out, it rattles and rattles and makes a terrible noise. There's something drastically wrong with it. So off we go to Woody. And so he comes back about 2 minutes later, and he says, I fixed the problem. I said, well, what the hell did you do? He said, I took the Coke can off the top of your car. I don't know if he charged me or not.
Probably did.
Kept it the Coke can. So my experience with Woody, you're going to be really missed, and particularly by me, and I'm sure everybody else in the community. Sure, we'll get him right up close here. The next item on our agenda is going to be audience participation. We have two people who have signed up this evening to speak. The first gentleman is Raymond Huff. Mr. Huff, would you please be kind enough to come forward to the microphone? Please state your name and address for the record, please.
I think my topic's being covered later on in the discussion here. It has to do with the stop signs down on 8th Street.
Now you're welcome to speak now.
Oh, okay. I've lived in this area for 13 years, and I frequent Blaine quite often. I live in Birch Bay, actually. And I've discovered that that stop sign down there at H and Peace Portal is a contestable situation as far as people getting tickets and being considered overactive enforcement. If I was sat down in front of there tonight for about 20 minutes, and during that time, 55 cars went by, and 40 of them did not stop, in my estimation. Rolling stop, but not stopped. And that's, I think, where they're passing out tickets for. 18 of them were British Columbia plates, 22 were U.S. plates. 15 cars did stop. Only one was a British Columbia car. And I think this has a lot to do with cultural things. I've driven a lot, and I've been driving for 64 years, and I've driven in 7 countries on both sides of the road, and 8 Canadian provinces. And up in Canada, when I go up there, I go up there frequently, put a lot of miles on cars up there. It doesn't seem like there's very much enforcement going on of anything. I never see a car pulled over. So I think that's part of the problem, that the British Columbia folks have not been used to any kind of rigorous or even non-rigorous enforcement. And so that's why they roll through the stop signs. I understand some of the businesses in the area are quite perturbed about the fact that people complain that this is a bad place to have business because there's overzealous enforcement on the stop signs. But it's all in the person's attitude about traffic, I think. Part of what the problem is about stop signs is nowadays, well, every car, almost all have automatic transmissions. So you have a tendency to just release the brake and let it start up again. But there's also a thing I call the roundabout syndrome, where you now come to roundabouts and you just look and yield. Well, that's coming to happen with people when they drive at stop signs, too, I think, because it's becoming more frequent, I suspect. 40 out of the 55 didn't stop, and that's kind of bad. Especially when it's kind of there's a notoriety involved in the enforcement of that particular sign. You'd think that people would get the message, having read the Northern Lights and all that, the comments and this kind of thing. So that's all I have to say. I feel sorry for the businesses that get shunned because they just got a ticket from one of their customers, or the customers got the ticket. But I think we still have to enforce the law, because what do you have if you don't have the law? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Huff, for your comments. Mr. Bill Beck, would you please come forward and be kind enough to state your name and address for the record?
Thank you. I wish Mike could have been here, so this could have all been at the same meeting, but maybe we'll do it next month, end of the month. My name is Bill Beck, 810 Peace Portal Drive. I'll try and get through this within 3 minutes. There are many things the city could do to help downtown merchants. I've submitted other suggestions at prior meetings and can furnish upon request. Tonight I would like to express my views mainly about the over-aggressive rolling stop ticket campaign that continues at Peace Portal and 8th Street and other locations, namely southbound at Truck Customs. I feel the 8th Street, the stop sign at southbound, once you clear U.S. Customs southbound at Truck, should be a yield sign. I'll go on here. It does serious damage to return visits to downtown and is extremely damaging to all downtown merchants. I've suggested many times to return to no stop signs on Pacific Highway along Peace Portal, which is basically the same road, in downtown Blaine, restoring what was a nice flowing downtown stretch of road for the last 100 plus years. I believe this stop sign has only been there about 10 to 15 years. Every slight rolling stop against tourists and visitors affects attitudes and return trips. This is not the only stop sign this happens at either. Like I mentioned, the stop sign just south of U.S. Customs at truck crossing southbound should be changed to a yield sign. The effect of these kind of petty tickets is why go downtown. They're sending the message to not come here. If I were to get a speeding ticket, one within reason, then that is justifiable. Speeding, in my opinion, is more dangerous on city streets than coming to a stop in an intersection, but ever so slightly moving than accelerating again. I think people do that to save gas. Again, on Monday, Martin Luther King holiday, the only officer that lays in wait and coaches this intersection was busy and aggressive this day. I was so frustrated. I counted 6 times in 2 hours folks pulled over, just where I do business, right in front of my shop. I had some customers that just came from a neighboring restaurant, and they said that the help in there complained that since she had been on shift, which starts at 11, they open, and this is about 1 o'clock, she counted him pulling over 11 people. That can't be good for downtown businesses, I heard one customer say. I even had 2 customers from out of town tell me just recently that they avoid downtown Blaine for the most part when they come south because of this ridiculous nonsense at not only this intersection but others in town. The city says they can't pull the stop signs, as if someone gets hit in those crosswalks, then they would be liable. Really? How about all the other crosswalks downtown with no stop signs? If someone hits a person in a crosswalk, the same laws work whether there is a stop sign or not, I believe. What is more dangerous, someone flying down Peace Portal 40 to 50 plus miles an hour, right in front of my building, many times I've seen, or a slight insignificant rolling stop at Peace Portal and H, or the stop sign at Truck Customs? If you want to help downtown, the one big thing you could do is restore the stretch of Peace Portal to the way it was, and then patrol the length of Peace Portal for speeders, and for crying out loud, let the traffic flow evenly and peacefully. This over-aggressive policing of our town for such minor rolling stop offenses sends a loud and clear message. As for folks that don't see the stop sign, the police say they ran the sign. Heck, it's the only sign on the entire stretch of Peace Portal from the border to Bell Road. It jumps out unexpectedly, and it hasn't been there really that long. I'm all about professional and efficient police work and doing the right thing, but this program of writing minor rolling stop tickets has to stop, and it's killing our downtown. It creates a hostile environment. When 15 or 20 stops or more are counted in a 4-hour period, one right after the other, it's ridiculous. Do you know how many folks came into my business the day after Martin Luther King Day, which was Tuesday the 17th? 2. I can't say that is the reason, but you get the idea. I'm almost certain downtown Blaine doesn't need another empty storefront or mailing depot, but this continued activity by the city will ensure that just may end up happening with MySpace, and likely others if the situation isn't remedied real soon. Immediately remove the stop sign at H and Peace Portal and cease all excessive ticket writing for minor rolling stops in Blaine. Instead, patrol the length of Peace Portal for excessive speeders, and possibly installing flashing ambers mid-block every second or third block. This would be a major victory for our businesses in our downtown and help restore a positive reputation for our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to address the council this evening? Seeing none, I'll go back to our agenda.
The next Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
We had planned to have the police chief do a presentation tonight, but have deferred that until next month. There's snow conditions that were taking precedence tonight.
Okay. Mr. Beck, you're welcome to return when the chief is here.
Yes, because you're available.
So, well, you can go to the internet and make sure that it's on the agenda for that evening. Okay, next item is the presentation by Steve Price on the status of Grandis Pond. Mr. Price, would you like to come forward and state your name and address again for the record?
Yes. I'm Stephen Price. I live at 1105 Front Street, Linden. I'm the project manager for Grandis Pond, and I'm here to speak to you and to the public about what's been happening with our project, bring you up to speed a little bit. I'm going to take a second here and play with the technology, so bear with me a minute.
Okay. Take your time.
Okay, thank you. As I mentioned, I'm here to speak to you tonight about Grandis Pond on the 49th parallel. And I'm here to let you know what we've been doing in the last few years primarily, but also refresh your memory as we approach March of this year. We're approaching the 12th anniversary of my personal involvement with this project, and I know that a number of you here have been involved in listening to this project's details for that many years as well. So let's get started. Just again, to refresh memory, we're talking about a project out at the far east end of the East Blaine sub-area. It's 438 acres. It's a planned unit development, and it is scheduled to contain approximately 1,013 single-family and multifamily housing units. In that mix, over one of the phases we'll talk about in a minute, it also includes the possibility of up to 48,000 square feet of commercial and workspace. It's comprised of five different development areas, made up of 885 single-family lots, 128 multifamily lots. You can read this as well as I can, but it helps keep me on track a second. We've got 76 acres of dedicated parks and open space, 164 acres of wildlife corridors, 7.9 acres of neighborhood commercial space, and up to 56 acres dedicated to streets and right-of-ways. The preliminary plat for this project includes 127 acres that would be divided up into 403 single-family lots, 21, almost 22 acres of open space, 27 acres of wildlife corridors. Just to orient you to the map, of course, H Street is the arterial across the bottom of the map, and O Street, or the international border, is at the north. Some of the market assumptions, you will recall that we introduced this project in 2005. And you recall what was happening in the real estate market between 2005 and 2008, and then things went south, as they say. So this project was conceived with some expectations of real estate market performance that kind of changed dramatically in 2008, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But we've readjusted our targets. We've seen the market return in many cases to pre-2008 levels. So we're optimistic, as we always have been, but even more so now. You can look at those numbers of what Blaine's most recent median price of homes sold was, what the potential growth rate or projected growth rate is for Blaine. Our goal continues to be to provide a choice of housing type and housing price. And we're hoping that we can, with the right developer or builder, we can achieve a range of, on an average price of between $260,000 and $350,000. Now that's going to vary. There's going to be some top-end houses. There's a few lots on the northern part of that project that are quite large and have some view potential. And then there are a number of lots that will be small, 6,000 square feet, or will be townhouses. So that's where the range is going to come in. We're looking at the likelihood of being able to put on the market between 40 and 60 units a year. Well, you can quickly do the calculation that we're looking at a build out here of 25 to 30 years. This is not going to happen, and I know this is going to be disappointing to everybody, this isn't going to happen overnight. As I've just said, we've been in it for 12 years already. So it's a long-term project, and we continue to pursue that dream. Now, just for the audience benefit and for all the council members, I think almost all of you have been on the council during this duration, but I just want to touch on this process again because, one, it's been quite lengthy. Two, you can be proud. The staff and the administrative boards and review process has been excellent. We've had great interaction. We've done, I think, a really neat project that the community can be proud of. But we started, as I mentioned, 2005. And then we went into an extensive planning process between 2005 and 2007. And we brought in some really top-flight talent to do the plan, the PUD plan and master plan for that site. And we feel really good about that. One of the things that we really feel good about is that we impacted negatively that whole 438-acre site. Less than 1% of the wetlands on that site have been affected negatively. And that comes from good planning, the location of streets, rights-of-ways, and so on. 2007, we got serious and got going. We submitted the PUD and preliminary plat. In the fall of that year, about 6 months later, the city put that on hold when it was determined that we really needed to look at what the infrastructure needs of East Blaine were. And we were totally on board on that. That makes all the sense in the world, because we're talking about an area that has been kind of neglected since it was, not neglected, but overlooked since it was annexed in 1994. So it was time to look at what the city's projection would be for servicing that area with utilities. And, of course, being the major project on the docket, we paid for that work. The city retained a firm, and that document was produced. And we happen to think it's a great plan. It was adopted in the fall of 2009. And as the city then reviewed its review process, it was determined that it would be better for all parties concerned if the city was able to retain a technical expert to review the CEPA checklist, which we certainly agreed with. That was done. We funded that project as well. In the summer of 2010, the project plan was modified to meet state and city comments. This is when they reviewed the CEPA checklist and made suggestions. We reviewed or redid the plan somewhat, and a revised MDNS, or mitigated declaration of non-significance, or sort of modified, one of those two, was issued. In the fall of 2010, the PUD application went to the council. They held, or to the Planning Commission, they held four public meetings and one site visit for members over a three-month review period. Planning Commission approved it in the spring. It went to the City Council, and the City Council, you folks approved it in the summer of 2011. Immediately, we asked the City Council to proceed with the implementation of the East Blaine Infrastructure Plan, which was primarily targeted at that point to the acquisition of the Mott's Hill utility right-of-way. And the Council considered that, met with staff, met with legal staff, and proceeded with eminent domain paperwork. This is the Mott's Hill right-of-way. This slide actually reflects street circulation in East Blaine, but the main light stream through the center of East Blaine is basically the Mott's Hill right-of-way. The city proceeded with that eminent domain, and then through negotiations with the property owner, it was able to, a successful acquisition of that eminent domain was concluded, and we paid $20,000 for Wilson Engineering working for the city to lay the route of that right-of-way. The city then negotiated, as I mentioned, with the owner through most of that property, and we provided the funds to acquire that right-of-way in 2013. So basically, that ended the process of acquiring permits and approvals from the city, acquiring the right-of-way to install the utilities to service our area, as in addition to the rest of East Blaine. We're talking about one other fairly major housing development near Harvey Road, and then, of course, the undeveloped property further to the east of Harvey Road. So this was pivotal to get things off the ground. But unfortunately, we still didn't have utilities. We still did not have the ability to hook up water, sewer, or power in Grandis Pond to the preliminary plat site. So we have been spending most of our time, well, all of our time since 2013, trying to overcome this issue of financing the utilities. Now, you have staff here that are well-tuned to this. They participated in all this. I'm sure they can answer any technical question that you have. But the traditional method of financing utilities for development were not available to us. That's primarily the LID process. So it requires that we put on our thinking caps and kind of think outside the box and try to come up with ways to do that. And those discussions and work cooperatively with the city is continuing. But I want to tell you about an early marketing effort. Shortly after 2013, maybe 2014, Ken Hertz, who's the primary owner of Grandis Pond, decided that we would try marketing the site without utilities. Now, you might ask yourself, that doesn't sound like a very successful or thoughtful idea, but At that point, we were kind of frustrated about our likelihood of ever getting utilities at that point. And so we were hoping that maybe we could attract a development company that was willing to come in, buy the project from us, finance the utilities on their own. Well, you can imagine the first thing that you need to do is you need to mark down the price of the property if the buyer is going to spend a considerable amount of money funding utilities. So that didn't prove successful. We had some offers that were well below what we felt we had invested into the site. And after kind of going through that process with a couple of potential out-of-country buyers, we decided that wasn't going to be successful. So we came back to the city with a request to rethink this whole idea. So we're having those discussions now. I think that City Manager Welbrick has maybe talked about some of those with you. We're interested in pursuing that. And we're about to kick off a new marketing plan, new marketing program that we hope will set the right tone, and with the discussions we're having with the city, put together a package that will be attractive in the market. The one thing that I want to touch on here, aside from the profit motive we're obviously interested in, is that Ken Hertz has a history of public service in his background as former Parks Director for Whatcom County, Mayor of the City of Bellingham, and for 16 years he was the CEO of Trillium, was instrumental in the initial planning of CIMIAM here in Blaine. His commitment to doing, I remember when he ran for mayor in Bellingham in 1976, his campaign motto was, let's do it right. And that's kind of the underscore of his whole professional career, was let's do it right. And he's committed to this site and the planning that we've done developing the PUD and the master plan. We have a time crunch that's on the horizon and appearing, and it's we've got a clock that's ticking, and we could run to a point where our PUD expires. The master plan would be no longer applicable, and certainly the preliminary plat would go away. And what would be left to us or any future buyer would be to redo all the planning and all the permit gathering for that site with different regulations in place. Now, Michael would have to address this himself, but I don't know that there's substantial changes, but there have been changes we know in some environmental requirements. And we want to guard the fact that we've been able to get 1,000 potential family units on that site with minimal impact on the environment. And so we want to try and get this done so that the PUD goes on with enough time that a potential buyer could come in and actually get the project underway before any of those permits expire. So that's kind of also a motive that we're operating under, and that's that ticking clock. I'm going to show a video now, a marketing video, and we've been showing this around the community, and we've received some feedback that we're taking seriously. There's going to be some modifications to this video a little bit, so I want you to know that this is what's turning out to be the first run. There'll be the Grandest Pond Video 2. That's the sequel, I guess. I'm gonna have to start this on YouTube because we had a technical glitch here.
Amid lush forests and snow-capped mountains on the U.S.-Canadian border lies an unparalleled opportunity in green development. Welcome to Grandest Pond, a planned residential community of 438 acres offering spectacular natural beauty, a prime location, abundant amenities, and incredible value. Located in Blaine, Washington, less than an hour's drive from Vancouver, B.C., Grandest Pond was purchased in 2005 and underwent years of extensive planning and review.
Grandest Pond is a special area. First of all, it's one of the few large developable sites on the Pacific Coast. But you just don't find this size of project in any community.
Through the efforts of key partners, owner Blossom Management, top urban planners, and the City of Blaine,
The master plan is 5 major development areas with up to 17 neighborhoods.
One of the things that makes it special is just the mixtures of a bunch of different housing types. So people can come in and say, hey, this is what my budget is, this is the type of house I wanted. So we have some cottage houses for people, say, that are retired and don't want to deal with a yard. We've got smaller single-family houses for people that want, hey, a starter house or something like that. And then finally, as we get towards the top, up to the bluff area, you've got some larger lots, you've got some view lots. So it really is a whole gamut for what people want to have.
The first plat, made up of 403 single-family lots, has already been approved. Major utilities are available to the property.
The permitting process is essentially complete at this point. We were accepted for a PUD, or a planned unit development.
Essentially, at this point, all you have to do is go in with the building. It's all teed up and ready to go.
Grandis Pond was planned using an innovative green design. It incorporates low-impact, sustainable development methods that help protect wetlands and other natural areas in the surrounding forest ecosystem.
The state of Washington, they have something called low-impact development strategies. And we use that by minimizing impact on critical areas. And we're trying to minimize the impervious surface areas so we have a better water quality and preservation of the natural environment for habitat that a lot of people enjoy. The number one thing was preserve the environment and create a lot of natural beauty that people come to the Northwest Washington for. So we were able to develop this for almost 1,000 homes. It's 450 acres. Only less than 1% is impacted on the wetlands.
Small neighborhoods with shared public areas create a sense of community and connection.
You know, a lot of times different developers say, I want to just maximize my lots. I want to see, you know, cram them all in there. I don't care what the ponds look like. Just Ken had a completely different approach. He said, hey, guys, we want to get through the reviewing agencies, so that means let's limit our wetland fills. We have this beautiful amenity, this pond. Let's make sure we have circulation around it. We have trails. We have neighborhood parks that the kids can play in these parks, and it's next to the post office area. So it's just each neighborhood has kind of a center point where they can come and talk.
Just minutes from the U.S.-Canadian border crossing, Grandis Pond is uniquely located at the doorstep of Greater Vancouver, a vibrant metropolitan area with more than 2 million people.
The location is an amazing, this is a unique spot. We can't find any other place like this anywhere. You actually put a map of Lower Mainland BC next to the state of Washington. I mean, it's an amazing map because you see this incredible urban area of 5 million people right there next to 250,000 people in Whatcom County. It's pretty astounding.
The city offers world-class dining, theater, museums, and cultural events, and is home to several major universities.
It's just hop, skip, and a jump from the border crossing at Blaine, so it has good connectivity with Lower BC.
Using a convenient Nexus Pass, Grandis Pond residents will be able to commute to the city's downtown business district faster than many residents of Vancouver suburbs. While Grandis Pond offers easy access to all the benefits of a big city, it also provides tranquil privacy and a slower pace of life. Situated in rural Blaine, Grandis Pond features breathtaking scenery of the Pacific Northwest.
The setting is looking north. You can see the Canadian Cascades. It's beautiful. Looking south, you can see Puget Sound from some locations. Within the development itself, we have terrific tree cover, great wildlife areas, a lot of ducks, deer within the area. It's a multi viewscaped kind of a development.
The neighborhoods are named after different Northwest flowers and plants. So we want to kind of bring that in for what makes this place special, not a generic place. It's unique to this place on the planet.
The region has a moderate climate perfect for enjoying the outdoors and is one of the most popular destinations in the United States for tourism, relocation, and retirement. Mount Baker and the Canadian Cascades offer prime skiing and stunning views, while the San Juan Islands attract boating enthusiasts from around the world. With nearby golf courses, marinas, hiking trails, fishing, and abundant wildlife, there are activities for everyone. Grandis Pond gives residents a high quality of life, plus easy access to the benefits of urban living, at a far more affordable price than what can be purchased near many major U.S. cities or just over the border in Canada.
British Columbia is going through a process that I think would just shock people in the United States. Housing prices there have just gone through the proverbial roof over the last 10 or 15 years. So when you go step across the O Street, which is the border, immediately north of our project, you've got $500,000 to $1.5 million homes. On our side of the border, the median price range should be somewhere between $300,000 and $350,000. So I think that's going to catch people's attention.
From a building and permitting perspective, the project offers developers long-term flexibility.
What's nice, the way we did the development regulations on this project, is that there's a lot of built-in flexibility. So you can have cottage homes, you could have small homes, you could have large homes, you could have multifamily, you could have commercial, you could have mixed use. So the development regulations are intended to allow flexibility. So it's a very market-driven product that will allow it to change over time.
The City of Blaine has played an integral role in winning approval for the Grandis Pond Master Plan and is eager to see its completion.
But a very supportive of city manager and city staff, which you seldom get in a community, really wanting to see this development materialize. They need it. They want it, and that's a big plus.
The city views the Grandis Pond development as essential to its plans for the future.
So it's critical for the city, for its growth potential, to have that project go. We want it to develop. It's important to us.
Through the City of Blaine, Grandis Pond has a plentiful water supply, plus sewer and electrical services. A water treatment plant for the community has already been completed.
We have a really state-of-the-art waste treatment plant, high-quality water. I think it's rated number 2 in Washington State. So for those things, for a development point of view, is really important. For the Grandis Pond project in particular, the city has allocated $350,000 to start the utilities up through the public property, in which we think is going to help developers all the way up the hill, including Grandis Pond ultimately.
Once built, Grandis Pond will be a signature Northwest development, offering residents and their families an outstanding living opportunity for generations to come.
I foresaw the site as being an excellent residential community, something unique. And it's unique because of all of the environmental assets that it has, from a pond to forest to views. And I wanted to see all of this put together in a well-planned, environmentally sensitive project, like no other.
For more information on turning the vision of Grandis Pond into the reality of a premier green development, please visit our website.
This has not gone public per se. This has not been used in marketing yet. As I mentioned at the beginning, we've shown it to several groups in the community, and we will be continuing to do that. And we're getting feedback, so as I say, we're making tweaks to that to be a little bit more representative and clear. The one thing I didn't mention when we were speaking of this slide was one of the things that we're also, will be coming forward with is a request to be able to phase the preliminary plat. We've got 7 neighborhoods in that plat, and one of the things we found when we've gone out and touched base with the market is the likelihood of, since we don't build houses, we have to sell property, develop, ready, permitted, and ready to go. And the likelihood of us being able to sell at this particular point a preliminary plat of 400 housing units is not high. It makes it more difficult. So if we can phase that to where we develop that on a neighborhood by neighborhood basis, maybe one or two neighborhoods at a time, then you get it into the realm of a wider spectrum of potential developers that would be more in their bailiwick, if you will, rather than having to deal with 400 units they can plan and finance and work toward 40 units. So, as I mentioned, we'll be bringing that forward through the process here in coming weeks. So at this point, that concludes my update for you. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have, and I'll conclude.
Questions, Councilmember?
how is it the deadline face? When is the deadline facing you, and how is that going to? What do we need to do as a council?
Okay. Do you want me to respond to that, or do you want to do that?
I'm sorry. What was the question?
The deadline. You're talking about the deadline for the PUD and stuff like that. So how is that? How do we affect that, or can we affect that?
You can't really affect that. The state law establishes a 7-year time horizon, and the city's already adopted the optional 2 1-year
right.
extensions
right.
under state law. So essentially, this project has as long as a project can have under right. state law.
When's the expiry date?
It is an excellent question that maybe Steve has a better handle
June
on.
June 2020?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I might add, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the deadline to get the project started. It's not to complete the entire PUD.
It's the deadline to record a final plat.
Yeah.
And then our code locks the PUD in perpetuity as the zoning for the area once
mm-hmm.
a final plat is recorded. So they have that timeline that Steve mentioned until June of 2020 to
okay.
record one final plat. And then at that point, it's much like Semiahmoo. It was approved in 85, but it still has the master plan living on, kind of laying out the concept for the neighborhood that would exist as well.
So in order for this to go ahead, then we need to figure out how the sewer gets there is the main thing, right?
In order for it to go ahead, the developer needs to figure out a way to get the infrastructure out there, yeah.
But the biggest one is the sewer. I mean, water and power.
Those are the big three.
Mm-hmm.
Well, water and power is actually somewhat significant as well.
Well, I know, but it's easier to do than the sewer line, isn't it?
There's no particular problems getting the utilities up there. You've got that way through the...
Yeah, the...
Nothing holding us up.
If there were money in hand, the utilities would go in. I mean, the right-of-way is all there for them.
So
preliminary design is in hand.
Okay. Question here.
Yes, that's maybe Raven. Is there a time frame on the right-of-way easement for Moss Hill?
Well, we phased it so we have an easement for utilities that precludes us from being able to put a full arterial street in there for, I think it was 20 years from the date of the agreement. So we have the ability to put in a road that accesses those utilities, but it just can't be a public road until...
But there's no time frame on, there's an expiration date or anything.
No.
Yes, buddy.
Steve, on this drawing here, you have 5 different development areas, and this is the first one you're going to be starting on. Are these in order? They're numbered 1 through 5. Did that necessarily mean after this one you'll do this one, area 2,
thank you.
And then area 3?
Let me get a copy of that map in front of me here as well. Sorry, I think, no, they don't denote the order.
Okay.
Well, I guess that's the simplest answer, is that no, they don't. For example, development area 5, well, actually, development area 5 is likely to be the last one. Development area 3 will be near the last as well, just because of the topography of those areas. So it would be development area 1, 2, 4, and then between 3 and 5.
Okay.
So what I mentioned at the very end was we're looking to bring forward for the city's consideration a request to phase development area 1 into 7 phases. So those would be phased in order that will come in with that application.
And your intention would be to fully develop area 1 before you start on
correct.
The next area.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the way the infrastructure lays out there, it gets constructed much easier that way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Steve, does that road that you have shown kind of going through the whole system,
yes,
is that on top of the ridge?
It goes, it, no, it isn't, but it goes uphill as you move toward the eastern border of the project. In development area 3, you get the highest elevations on the site up there. So there is an upgrade there.
So basically everything will run downhill from there to the...
Oh, I see where you're going with this, and I'm going to get it confused real fast because, yes, we've had that discussion so many times, but the best I can say without having that data in front of me is, yes, it's all going to run downhill eventually.
Well, and the main reason we went with that right-of-way for the easements was because we demonstrated that the sewer can flow by gravity.
Makes a lot of difference.
Are area 3 and 4 your highest elevations?
3 is, I don't know that 4 is equally as high.
Okay.
But that's one of the view areas is 3 and 4.
Right.
Or 3 and 5.
3 and 5. Okay.
Steve, help me out here. You are now marketing this without the utilities, is that correct?
Right, and that's one of the things that we're going to change from in the video is it says that utilities are available to the site.
Yeah.
Of course, they're
not.
Yeah. One, without going into, I guess at this point, it's the marketing strategy that I'd be happy to share with the council in an executive session. I don't know whether I have the right to say that or not, but those are kind of proprietary, the way we're going to approach that. But it would, since we have everything in place, and the Grandis Pond folks have at this point agreed to contribute up to $3 million to the total cost of the utilities that we need to plug in. That with that and some other things that may be in the works on the city side of the equation, as these discussions continue, we think we can offer an opportunity for a buyer that would lead immediately to the construction of utilities. So, no, they're not on at the property line, but everything would be in place, including financing, to begin construction.
Other questions?
I appreciate
your
patience once again. Thank you.
We're getting old again.
Okay, next item on the agenda is written communications. Do we have any?
We received a letter dated January 24th from Jim Lentine regarding the Semiahmoo Shore update, and emails dated February 15th from city staff and Craig Stelflug regarding speeding traffic.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is the fire chief's report. Chief Hollander.
Evening, Council. My report won't be so grandest, but however, it's our statistics for January. You can see we did 361 responses in the month of January. I just kind of go over this briefly. For Blaine, there were 84 calls, Semiahmoo 13. Our response times are right about where they should be. A little bit of information, the Washington State Survey and Ratings Bureau has been visiting us the last couple of weeks, and so we're hoping to maintain our fire rating that we currently have in the city of Blaine, which is a 4, where if anything, we're hoping we might go up to a 3. A 3 is actually better than a 4. And that's what a lot of insurance companies that use that number to base your insurance rates on. Not as many as there used to be in years past, but there's still quite a few that use that. A little report on our operations division and our training division. And then as far as inspections go, we had 30 inspections for the month of January, which was very good. A little bit on our shop report that shows you what goes into maintaining our 12 fire stations and all of the fire trucks, and that's just 1 month worth of work. And then I added this month in some social media statistics. Our email group now has over 300 followers. Our Facebook site hit in 1 month about 1,800 folks. Our Twitter account has 114 followers. And then, not surprisingly, statistically on our website, younger people visit our site more than older people do, but, you know, we had 30 people over 65 on our website, so the older people, they're getting the hang of it. And then on the right, there's a list of different countries that have visited our site. Kind of interesting reading. So with that, I'll answer any questions you might have.
I see, according to your signage, you're being very optimistic, and that spring is coming soon.
Well, we put that up when it was warmer, yeah. Put that up before today's snow, unfortunately. Luckily, the roads only, it snowed all day, but the roads primarily stayed wet. They didn't freeze, so that.
You may want to change.
Are they freezing now? I'll go right over and take the sign.
You're going home. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay, next item on our agenda is the consent agenda. We have approval of bills in the amount of $177,186.18 and advance pay of $538. Approval of the special council minutes for February the 13th, 2017. Approval of council minutes for February the 13th, 2017. Approval of the special council minutes for February the 21st, 2017. And lease for the 2017 Camel NJPA vacuum truck and the Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee appointments. I would be willing to entertain a motion.
Who's getting appointed?
Oh, I got to look at my hands now.
Sorry about that.
I'm sorry. Ann Bowen, who's a financial person who was working with economic development in Bellingham, and my mind just went there.
Okay. That's good enough.
Jim.
Jim or Mike? Yeah.
Jim McKinney.
Jim McKinney.
Apple consultant.
Okay. Anyone
care to make a motion?
So moved.
Motion has been made.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Hearing no nays, the motion is carried 6-0. Next item on our agenda is council action items. The first one is the bid award for the Lincoln Park Sewer. Raven, I think that's you.
Yeah, I'll be handling the next couple items for council. The bid award for Lincoln Park Sewer should be pretty self-explanatory. We had a bid process on the open market for 2 weeks to get that sewer through Lincoln Park that Steve Price was just talking about, the city being committed to. And lowest bid award was Calder Curcio, whose bid was $250,645. It is within budget. And we recommend the City Council accept the bid and authorize the City Manager to enter a contract with Culler Curcio Brothers.
Okay. We have a staff recommendation to accept the bid and authorize the City Manager to enter into the contract with Culler Curcio Brothers Construction, Inc. in the amount of $250,645.
So moved.
Motion has been made.
Can we have a discussion? Seconded.
Motion has been made and seconded. Questions or comments?
Raven, is there, given the area up there, is there any potential for an overrun on the work that would cost go over what they're bidding?
Well, one of the reasons why we bid it this time of year was to kind of open up the window a little bit. Last summer we were hearing that the contractors were pretty busy. So we feel we have enough environmental controls in the site to keep things under control. If we do get some crazy rainstorm or whatnot, we did change the bid through an addenda process to bring in essentially all imported fill because we just didn't see trying to put back clay. And I saw a lot of potential risk there. So we just decided to include that in the bid. And so I think we have spent a lot of time on this and the time that we've taken to put it out, and I feel very comfortable that we're going to be able to bid it, build it in that amount.
Is there any start time, finish time that you're aware of?
No.
Okay. Further questions or comments?
Question.
Question from Bonnie.
So the sewer main going through the park is a 15-inch.
Yes, ma'am.
How big is the one going up H Street?
Eight.
Which is why we need to put in, just to kind of reiterate this for the public, that we need to put in a second sewer line that is large enough to accommodate the growth in East Blaine. That's why
That's
we need
correct.
To run a second line all the way up.
Yeah, okay. We did the analysis before we did the H Street project,
to determine what the best route would be, and it was determined at that time to leave 8-inch on each street and go with the 15-inch here. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, there might be, you know, there's still some minor development that can occur on 8th Street. And the other thing to keep in mind is we're starting right at the end of E Street now. But at some point in time, we need to take that line from E Street to the truck route and make that 15 as well. We're not including that at this time. The money that we have budgeted, we bought the design for it. So when we do have the budget and the need for it, we can. But until that development happens, we just said, let's just get the sewer started. Get a little temporary connection there from the 15 to the 8, and then at a future point when we get some of that development, we would then expand the city's section of the sewer further downstream. So there will be a need for that. I want to make sure that council is aware that there will be future projects within our existing system to accommodate this development, but we don't see any reason to build that right now. Let's get this incentive started, and hopefully it'll be the catalyst for that development to occur such that we can expand upon our existing system.
How far is that field?
Yeah. So that future will go all the way to the plant?
No. I'm talking from the end of E Street, south by Burger King, to SR-543, and then the crossing on SR-543 is fine.
Okay.
And there's a couple of small areas that we're going to need to upsize as we go downstream, but not the whole way to the plant. I'm sorry to cause that alarm.
That's what Charlie, that was his question.
Okay. You got my heart going, Charlie.
Are there any further questions? We have a motion on the table, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Hearing no nays, the motion is carried 6-0.
This is a milestone.
Yes, two milestones this evening. The next one is also...
Next time is the... I'll let you pronounce it.
Seelich.
Seelich.
How do you say it?
Seelich.
Seelich.
So this is a big milestone. Sorry we don't have our city attorney presenting this to you today, but I'll do my best. But this is a supplement to the memorandum of the settlement agreement that originally occurred back in 2001. At that time, there was a memorandum of understanding that said that when all was said and done, we would transfer property from Blaine to the Lummi. Once we decommissioned our old plant. And so we have been working closely with the Lummi since that time, especially over the time of the construction that we did in 2011, 2012-ish, where we were working with them on actually the decommissioning. We left a building that they asked us to leave and so on and so forth. So now we're at the point where we have an agreement that everybody is comfortable with. It has a supplemental memorandum of agreement, and then the short plat itself, once this is all signed, the short plat would then get completed, and that would be the actual land transfer after that point. So this is a very, very big step in a long process to move forward with approving this supplemental memorandum of agreement. And then the other part of this is to authorize the city manager and or mayor to execute the necessary documents that would be needed to, in effect, complete this transfer. And we understand there'll be a signing ceremony and so forth that'll be scheduled later. But this is the first step to get all those other pieces rolling.
Okay. The staff would like us to, number one, approve the supplemental memorandum of agreement to the settlement agreement. The city attorney and city manager are authorized to make minor adjustments to the agreement as necessary to conclude the agreement. provided no additional costs or liabilities to the city are incurred thereby. Number two, to authorize the city manager and or the mayor of the city to execute any necessary documents approved by the city attorney to effect the transfer contemplated by the supplemental memorandum of agreement to the settlement agreement.
That's the motion. So moved.
Motion has been made.
Second.
And seconded. Are there further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed say nay. Hearing no nays, the motion is carried 6-0.
Thank you.
Next item on our agenda is a collective bargaining. Mr. City Manager.
Good evening, Council. We have before you an amendment to the Local 231 Teamsters non-uniform contract that provides for a $500 a year per employee deferred comp match that basically allows the employees to begin a deferred comp program on a one-time basis. As you recall, we included a 1% increase for COLA for all employees as part of the 2017 budget. There have been four groups now that have been we've been working with, the electricians, the police officers, this Teamsters non-uniform group, and the exempt employees. All of the groups except for the police department now have accepted that 1%. This group in particular, because of the nature of their contract and negotiations, also received this $500 one-time deferred comp match. Now the requirement for the match is that each employee to get that match has to pay up an equal amount. It cannot exceed $500 for the month. We're working through the details of that now. Jeff's been working with collective bargaining to get the details of that worked out. But this needs a council action. The others don't because you included it as part of your budget approval originally back in the fall when we did the budget. So we're hopeful that the police department will conclude their negotiations, but we're happy that this one's now completed. And we'd ask that the council approve the amendment as we proposed it to you.
Okay, the motion is to authorize the city manager to sign a memorandum of understanding to the 2014 through 2017 collective bargaining agreement that reflects the negotiated changes. The MOU, which is the memorandum of understanding, will be retroactive to January the 1st, 2017.
So moved.
Motion has been made.
Second.
And seconded. Are there further questions or comments of the city manager?
Clarification. The $500 deferred compensation, that's per year, correct?
That's for 1 year, one time. Other questions or comments?
Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed say nay. Hearing no nays, the motion is carried 6-0.
Thank you. So just as a way to expedite the evening, if you wish, I just had one comment, and then we're here to fulfill the remainder of the meeting's agenda, if you'd like, or if you want us to defer some reports, we can be happy to do that. Mr. Zell is in the audience tonight, and he's asked to have approval by the council to work with the city to do some archiving, correct? And so I apologize. I didn't get his agenda item on the agenda tonight. We'll have that at the next meeting, but basically he's looking for the city to support his effort. You want to talk about that for a moment? Would that be okay?
Sure, absolutely.
Want to use the microphone and sign?
Just state your name and address as we need it for the record.
Okay, I'm James Zell. If you were students of mine when I was substitute teaching here, you'd call me Grandpa Jim. But I sent two letters, one to Charlie and one to Bonnie. I hope they got it.
Yep.
Yep.
And what I am passionate about preserving stories and the newspapers and pictures. And just to, so future generations, as well as us, it'll take me about a year to do it, will have a resource to find out what we were, where we came from, and where we're going. And I just want, the only thing I want from the council, I'd like to have a public approval, not for me, but for my historical preservation project. I will be going on March 17th to the Charleston, if I can pronounce that right, Neighborhood Association. I was talking to the president there, and she wanted me to come and say the same thing I'm saying here now, maybe, and show some of my work. And she was hoping that there'd be people there that would like to join me. And it's not my project. I'm just the one that is pushing it. It's the project for Blaine. And I want to hit the school. I'm going to be sending an email to Jim Nelson, because some of the technical stuff, I don't know. I want to be able to change my archivable history into searchable PDF, which that's a lot less data, I mean, a lot less memory, and people can be able to research it by putting a name in. But I'm just looking to, I want it to be a project of the city and by the city. I just want to be part of it. I'll do the work.
Thank you. Wonderful project.
Okay, well, thank you. Project. I've got a lot of good stories already. Yeah. And I've Travis Stallman, which more likely some of you people here may remember him. I think he retired from Blaine service in 1977. I've got from his family his history of working starting as a lineman all the way up to the last thing I saw him get was superintendent of all departments, which I don't know what all departments mean. But if you're interested in him, he was instrumental in a lot of things. I've got that information. Any questions?
We'd certainly like to get it on the agenda, and we'll have it on, I hope, for next meeting. And maybe you can come at that time, too.
Okay, I sure will.
Appreciate
it. Jim, do you foresee that there might be a website created at some point where people could go in and read this stuff?
I would love that, but I'm going to have enough work to do this archiving.
Mm-hmm.
I have just, you archive media by scanning, and I got a scanner, and I scan the documents and the pictures, and I can blow up a 2x3 picture to 8x10. Mm-hmm. And it's taking me 4 minutes per scan. So it's time intensive. With my camera, when I'll be doing the Blaine papers, it'll only take me about 30 seconds to do the same job. But I would love to see it on a website. I would like to see, and also like my computer guru said, when you back up anything, you archive anything, you need to archive a number of different ways, a number of different places, and so it'll always be secure.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
It's a very worthwhile project, and we'll look forward to getting it on the agenda.
Tonight is an interesting night. I think that drop in temperature. We may have some ice on the roads. So we've got department reports and council reports. What I'd like to do this evening is just ask if there is anything that we have to have or know this evening. And if not, we'll hold it off to the next meeting. So department reports, do you have anything that we should know this evening or which can be held off? Okay. How about council reports? Does there anybody have a particular council report that you feel that it's important that we have it this evening. If not, we'll go to calendars. Are there any difference in calendars? Any changes in calendars? Is there any unfinished business? Is there any council new business?
There's just one piece of information I should probably have talked about, which is there's a farmhouse gang meeting this Friday in Mount Vernon. So okay. If any council members want to go to that, please let me know.
What was that again, David?
The farmhouse gang, which is the regional transportation.
David, are you
down in Mount Vernon.
Are you going to go?
It's on my calendar now. If nobody wants to go, then I'll have to decide whether I do or not.
But I think it's on ferries.
I put it on my calendar. Just
the main agenda is on ferries, though, isn't it? State ferries. That's all I saw on the agenda.
So.
So I wasn't going to plan to go.
Okay, that's fine. Myself. I just want to make sure I remember.
I don't think of it. I'll go if it's just on, you know, if the main topic is ferries. Yes, Dennis.
Dave, did you have any luck down in Olympia?
Yes. So the question is, did I have any luck in Olympia? And the answer is sort of. I did meet with Van Weerden and with Representative Byes together, which I thought was good. Mr. Erickson was not available to meet. The I-274 project is alive and well. They're very familiar with it. In fact, last Thursday, Raven and I also had a conversation with Van Weerden, who's going to introduce it again in the House side on Friday morning. So I haven't seen the report about that yet, but it had already been introduced on the Senate side by Senator Erickson and was going to go through the House side. So I thought that was very good. We also introduced the infrastructure for East Blaine, which is a new project that is kind of falls within the economic development category that the city was interested in. We talked specifically about that with I did with both of those representatives, and Vincent Byes, on his own initiatives, wants to take it forward. So we had a conversation about that. I sent them the most recent information about that. We talked briefly about that with Van Weerden again on Thursday afternoon. This morning, last Friday morning, we had a conversation with Mike Martin from the city of Linden. Linden has been really effective in the legislature for the past couple of years, acquiring more than $5 million worth of resources. That's pretty darn good. And the reason they've been able to do that, they've been very clear about what they want, they've been specific and have targeted projects they think really, you know, kind of spoke to some of the priorities of the legislature. We met with Mike, and he's given us some concepts and ideas, but he also introduced us to his legislator, his lobbyist. And so we had a conversation with, I had a conversation with her earlier today. They've got a person on their staff who was recently the past capital budget manager for the state. She's since retired, apparently has many years of experience. So we're going to put her in contact with us and vice versa. We're going to send her our information about those two projects and get some analysis done, initially at no charge. And if we want to use them as a lobbyist, we can talk about that. There's different lobbyists for different kinds of purposes, but that's certainly something that's been effective in the city of Linden. So we want to kind of learn from what they've done and see if that might help us for both of those projects. So I think that's been good news. We made some progress. There's no new money in hand, but I think we inched the projects forward.
So dollar figure?
So the I-274 is about $10
million. No, East Plain.
And the East Plain is $3 million. There's already $3 million on the table from Grandis Pond. You heard that tonight from Steve Price. So the idea would be to take a project forward for three. The person I talked with on the phone said that's probably pretty high for one project, but it certainly could be used as a match and a lever for other things. So I think that's where the budget help will come in. Is where are the other pots of money and how do you configure it in a way that might.
So is $6 million the general figure running from the edge of the park the rest of the way, about $6
yes.
million?
Mm-hmm.
And that's for all the utilities.
All
so
the utilities.
The estimate is like 2.6 is sewer. We don't really have a bona fide great estimate on power because they haven't really provided us anything yet, but we just essentially took their number and doubled it.
Okay.
But you have
back
to
of the envelope calculating it.
The power is, I'm matter of having to put in sufficient for the whole project, is that right?
It's, yeah, what's, because they need to have a water booster station to get the water up the hill, they need three-phase power. We're not putting in three-phase power right now when we're extending our power to East Plain. We're putting in single-phase. So they're going to need to string that extra conduit through. And, I mean, we'll put the conduit in the ground when we're out there. That's not a problem. But to actually put in all the rest of the infrastructure is pretty expensive.
So that'll be their $3 million contribution, I guess, to
their $3 million, right.
Finish it up.
Further questions? If not, I will adjourn the meeting at 7:28.
Thank you.